We arrive here today to debate at social distances from each other.
There's no doubt that the old politics of the two-party system is now gone and over.
I don't need lectures from you or anybody on the Sinn Féin side of the house.
We're very reluctant to say what's red lines, but we do have to take climate seriously.
There's going to be constant criticism, there's going to be a lot of disappointment, and whoever goes into government is going to be unpopular.
Okay. Hello and you're very welcome to Your Politics podcast from RTE News. I'm Paul Cunningham. Joining me here in studio is the RTE political brain box, Micheál Lahan.
Hello.
By remote, we also have Sandra Hurley.
Hi, Paul.
And we're going to start off with a quick word with Tommy Meskell, who's our reporter, who's been following on the travails of the Green Party. I mean, you would think this week that after they got over the line, a landmark piece of legislation, the Climate Action Bill, we'd be talking about the ins and outs of it. But instead, we're talking about the inside workings of the Green Party. Tommy, you have a couple of clips. Tell us about them.
Yeah, so as you were saying there, this week should have been about the climate bill, but instead it's about the Lord Mayor of Dublin, Hazel Chu, a Green Party councillor who has put her name forward to run in the upcoming Shannon's election. The trouble is, however, the Green Party maintained that they had a pact that they weren't going to run a candidate. At least that's the view of many members, including the leader, Eamon Ryan. Others, however, say that Hazel Chu was free to seek nominations to run as an independent. And that's causing a bit of discussion and controversy because she is the chair of the Green Party and yet will be running as an independent. And this week, she launched that campaign and she got many questions during that launch at St. Stephen's Green this week about why she was doing it, what the consequences were for the party, a party that is coming across divided and has been coming across as a divided party now for quite some time. And there was also a lot of discussion as to whether she might in fact be removed as chair and also kicked out of the party. So in this clip, we can hear Hazel Chu when she is asked about if it's possible to remove her from her position and ultimately remove her from the party. And Hazel Chu explains the process as to how that might happen.
If you have gone against the party in breaking the rules, then you will be either faced or assessed for sanction. Because my role is constitutionally mandated and selected by membership, then membership gets to decide if they want to host a selection convention to say that I no longer am the chair. Absolutely, I'm open for that discussion. It's entirely, like, my role is thanks to them. So if they decide I'm no longer fit for it, then that's a decision they can make.
So that's Hazel Chu's stance. What else did, who else from the party did we hear from?
So today, Brian Leddon was appearing on RTE's Leaders' Questions, and Brian Leddon chaired the pre-legislative scrutiny of the climate bill that was published this week. And I suppose it should have been a big week for people like Brian, and it should have been a big week for the party as a whole. If ever you were to explain your role in government, I suppose, over the past, you know, couple of years when it comes to the next election, you would point to something like the climate bill and say, you know, look at what we got over the line. We can hear what Brian Leddon had to say now. He was asked by Sharon Ní Bheolán if this whole episode this week over Hazel Chu has been damaging to the Green Party.
In my mind, the most important work is the policy work that we're doing and what we're trying to achieve in government. And I think it's disappointing that this messy situation has kicked off. And it really doesn't help. And I would encourage everybody who's involved to, you know, try and speak to each other to resolve their differences in private, because it's not becoming that, you know, we get these divisive situations on WhatsApp groups, on social media, on mainstream media as well. And that's not good for the party.
And that was Brian Leddon. Tommy, thanks very much for setting all this conversation up. Sandra, if I can come to you first. It seems clear to me that Hazel Chu was entitled to stand as an independent, given the constitution that the Green Party has. But just because you're entitled to do it doesn't necessarily mean you have to do it if it's going to set off a rumpus.
Yes, and that does seem to be the case, that perhaps there wasn't a formal pact
in terms of not running for the Seanad at this point. But Brian Leddon also said this morning that there was perhaps an expectation of a quid pro quo down the line. So perhaps some sort of unspoken agreement that the Green Party might be favoured for a Seanad seat later and the government partners would row in behind this. But certainly this has exposed deep divisions in the party. And in particular, I think it, given that Catherine Martin is one of those who supported Hazel Chew's candidacy, it has exposed the division again and the disharmony between Catherine Martin, the deputy leader, and Eamon Ryan. He was very clear that they were not running a candidate. Now, I know that Hazel Chew, for her part, she feels that she has been blocked over the last couple of years, that she was blocked from running in the general election despite her huge local election victory in 2019. She was blocked from being elevated to the Seanad back when the Greens went into government, and that she was blocked at this stage. But it has been really divisive. And I'm told that in terms of this no confidence motion, which was tabled by three of the party senators yesterday at that meeting, that has really just deepened divisions. Some people felt that was a pretty poor move. It was symbolic. It's meaningless in terms of the constitution. You can't vote no confidence in somebody other than a party leader, and it has made things worse. So where is it all going to end? I think there's a hope that maybe they can de-escalate it a little bit and maybe pull back somewhat from this.
Micheál, one thing that should be said is that the platform under which Hazel Chew was standing is the fact that we don't have enough women in politics, and we certainly don't have enough diversity in politics. And she said even though she felt that her chances to stand were very slim, this was something that Irish politics needed to tackle. It needed to tackle head on. There was an opening to do it, and that's what she was going to do.
Yeah, it does a load of other things as well, though, doesn't it? And it does show a kind of pressure that is there within the Green Party, that if there wasn't a third wave of the pandemic, I would have expected that it would have come to the surface at this point anyway. But that would be in the context of perhaps budgetary issues beginning to come into view now and other kind of more traditional political problems. So I would have anticipated that, notwithstanding the level of support in the Green Party for the programme for government. What I don't think many did expect was that it would happen at this particular point. And in that sense, it does look like self-inflicted damage. And it looks like damage that's occurring within the party before the real pressures of government kick in. And they are going to kick in at some point in the next year or so, where you will be looking at really severe budgets and all those kind of tests that the Greens faced before. And they did go through major moments of self-examination, whether it was at those gatherings and those reviews in the RDS and other places and the like. All that has to come yet. So then you ask the question, how destabilising ultimately is this to the coalition? Well, maybe perhaps this could be cauterised at this point, and you could see whatever break-off is going to come either in this event or also with the CETA agreement that ultimately will have to be voted on. Could you see things crystallising at this point? And then those who have decided then that they to stay the course and to talk about things like the climate change bill, that ultimately this could have a kind of a binding effect within the government, because those who were never fully okay with going into government would have left the parliamentary party at that point. I think that is a possibility.
Sandra, it seems to me that there's two things happening at the same time. On the one hand, there's the policy difference with a minority within the parliamentary party more to the left than the rest of the party. And then you also have this combination which crystallises into a personality issue between Catherine Martin, who clearly wants to be the next leader, Eamon Ryan, who is the leader and doesn't want to let go just yet. And so a policy difference is now culminating in a personality difference, and that's leading to a level of bitterness maybe which we haven't seen for quite some time.
Yes, and it certainly is bitter, because a lot of people would question in relation to this decision by Hazel Chew. She is unlikely to win this election. I think she has conceded that herself. People sometimes run for the Seanad because they want to increase their personal profile, but Hazel Chew has a very big profile. At the moment, she's the Lord Mayor of Dublin, and even before that, she was particularly well known as a politician. So it seems an odd one, but as I mentioned earlier, I'm told that she feels she has been blocked repeatedly and that she needed to take a stand in order to push through in this way. But it has really exposed those divisions, and it tells you that leadership election that happened last year when it was actually a lot closer than expected between Eamon Ryan and Catherine Martin, that that just has not fully resolved the direction for the parliamentary party, and that, that it just, it simply remains there as a sore and people are pulling in different directions.
Micheál, it would be remiss of us not to actually look at what actually happened, the Climate Action Bill getting over the line, because in many places it is a significant victory for the Green Party that both Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael have pushed for not long-term targets but short-term targets. They have put more teeth in the bill to ensure that these types of policies are actually enacted. They've, the Green Party, to a certain extent, you could say, has actually won.
Yeah, they you could say that. And a lot of the things they spoke about and those kind of points in the negotiations, the late night points, have been delivered on. And I think what was notable too in the press conference afterwards, that there was a sense of a political necessity identified by particularly the Taoiseach, but also by the Taoiseach, that they had to be on board with these targets now as well, not just for the planet and the like, but you felt for their own political health as well. I think that is one of the things, because a lot of what we heard, we have been hearing for quite some time, way back to 2007 and the run into that election from the Green Party. But I thought it was notable that you saw the other parties like Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil thinking that they really had to be part of this in a meaningful way. At the same time, the challenges and those big questions that propped up at that press conference repeatedly as well about things like the national herd and if it faces reduction or not, they will still have to be dealt with by those other parties and addressed.
And that will be the acid test, obviously. OK, we leave the Green Party there and move on to probably the big issue that everyone's talking about, is that the government is going to have a cabinet subcommittee on COVID-19 on Monday, that just before that, NPHET is going to meet, and then they're going to make a decision on the question of easing of restrictions. Sandra, what's the mood music like it now? How would you characterise it?
I think we were always led to believe that any changes on April 5th would be minimal. But I think even in the run-up to that decision next week, the Taoiseach and the Taoiseach have been even dampening down expectations even more so. The Taoiseach telling his parliamentary party meeting yesterday that the situation was fragile. Leo Varadkar pointing to all this negative data from GP referrals, which is leading people to believe that there's going to be a bit of a spike in terms of the COVID numbers. So we're not expecting a huge amount, but the political balancing act here is that people need something, something to look forward to, some sort of change, some sort of feeling that there's a payback. You can't just keep everybody in lockdown endlessly. And I think that we're getting that from all the backbenchers at the parliamentary party meetings. In the Dáil today, Roisin Shortall was talking about setting out a longer term plan or telling people how they were going to step forward from the vaccinations. Leo Varadkar definitely not saying that they would set out more medium-term plans next week. That I think he was dampening expectation on that as well. They just feel that the situation at the moment is too uncertain.
What did you make of what Leo Varadkar had to say in the Dáil, Micheál? It was interesting.
Yeah, I don't think he was trading in the currency of hope anyway, saying that...
Short supply.
In very short supply, and saying that that prospect of getting numbers down, that was a very real prospect last year, doesn't appear to be there this time, and that he couldn't see that the current levels falling. It seemed to be, the implication seemed to be any time soon, no matter what happened. He did say he needed to hold out hope about the summer, but at the same time saying country's not out of the woods and there is some alarming figures there. So for all those reasons, it's difficult to see how there can be any meaningful easing of the restrictions. And it is curious in some ways that the debate right now is the same as it was in those days leading into December, where you did see the figures going in a certain direction, but yet politicians feeling that they had to give people hope because they had reached their limit. But of course, they have allowed that entire, I hit that, another one of those words, narrative, it goes back to the Brian Cowan time, but they have allowed that that particular set of messages to go out there. And as a result, politically, there is pressure to do something, and it probably does fall down on the 5 kilometre limit, which they feel moving that a small bit probably won't make a huge difference, and things like sport as well could possibly be done. But there is risk. I mean, there are serious risks there with that. I mean, Christmas proved that. And as well as that, you do have, and politicians have this, and they know it, massive anecdotal evidence that there is going to be a move out of the big cities and around the country at the Easter weekend. And this is coming this time from people who have been compliant with the rules for more than a year. And politicians somehow feel if they give a little bit that they maybe can curb that huge movement of people that's going to take place. They also see that there is probably some way to go on the figures that are rising at the moment, because they think they're linked to what happened on Patrick's Day and to the many thousands of people who may have traditionally gone to Cheltenham but probably met in each other's homes to watch the races during that week.
I mean, it's hardly scientific analysis here, Sandra, but what's your sense of it, just from what you see, about the question as to whether or not people at a general sense of fed up with it, saying, I've done it long enough, but if once a week I have to go over to my mates and sit in the back garden, I'm going to do it. Or if I'm going to go to Easter, I'm going to go home and see my family, I'm going to do it. Or I have the access to a house in West Cork, I'm going to take it.
Yeah, I think there's huge frustration. I mean, we hear that from everybody. You know, I think giving people the go-ahead to meet up outdoors in certain numbers would really help. And of course, anecdotally, people are doing that anyway. I mean, if you run into people in your local park, you're going to talk to them from a safe distance, of course. But
you don't have to put in the qualifications there. We believe you.
Yeah, of course. But yeah, I think politicians are aware of that. And I met a former minister this morning who was talking about, he felt that the government... and he, of course, is part of the government, but not at that cabinet level. He felt that they really had to do something. He was unhappy as well about this fact that there's not going to be any easing of the people allowed to attend worship for Easter. Now, we know that that isn't going to happen because of the dates involved here. But there's also that push on allowing funeral attendance to increase a little bit. Certainly a sense that people really feel that they have to have something. And then in tandem with that, we are getting the vaccinations ramping up enormously, according to Stephen Donnelly this morning. It really is, from about next week onwards, things should be ramping up massively. Big challenges there, but people would like to see some sort of happy result out of that, with things getting a little easier.
Even though the health minister was saying that the drugs are coming, the vaccines are coming, and it's all going to ramp up, we still have a small matter of possible ban on those self-same vaccines. And when you've got things like we're waiting for the Johnson & Johnson single shot to come, if there's a ban on certain ingredients, then even those plans could be cocked up as well. So I'm wondering, Micheál Hannan, is this the time for Micheál Martin, irrespective of whatever has been suggested to the public before, to say vaccinations come first, everything else is secondary, we're staying in lockdown, and I'm not giving you any further chance, because otherwise we're going to be locked in for a year?
Yeah, but you don't feel the ground has been set for that, has it? That would be a major change in emphasis. And it is surprising how government haven't identified perhaps yet what Ronan Glenn was talking about last week, that the summer can be saved if you do this, this and this. And even when Leo Varadkar was asked about will the plan announced next Tuesday set out, go beyond the next number of weeks and look to the months ahead, he didn't seem to say that it would. He said they don't want to make give assurances that they would then have to withdraw some weeks later. But without that, without a really simple message that everything hinges on vaccinations and the summer can be saved, well, then you feel it does become increasingly difficult for the government to sell whatever message it's going to sell on Tuesday.
One other quick one, Sandra Hurley, happened this week. We've got tomorrow the opening of mandatory hotel quarantine. The facility, you think it's the Crown Plaza, is going to be the first one which opens. And Leo Varadkar saying in the Dáil that a lot more countries are going to be added to this list. Is this going to now...
At the same time saying it doesn't work because Scotland proved that and it's not a silver bullet.
But, you've already answered the question. Do you think, Sandra Hurley, that this story is going to slide off the media agenda and now the facilities are up?
I suspect that the numbers we see checking into these mandatory hotel quarantine facilities and paying up to €2,000, I think those numbers are going to be very small. Now, to be fair to the government, there's obviously a deterrent factor. People who might have thought of coming to Ireland are they're not going to come now because of the cost. But there is, of course, the other factor, which is that somebody's they might have originally travelled from a country which is on this danger list, the high risk list, and maybe they won't tell the truth about it. That's been pointed out by the opposition. I think the numbers, yes, are going to be very small. Some in government feel that, it wasn't something that's going to have a huge effect, but they were just pushed into it by the opposition. And the opposition, of course, wants them to go much further and quarantine everyone in hotels who's coming into the country.
Yeah, what do you make of it, Micheál? I mean, don't want to labour this one too long, but, you know, is it the case now that even from the political parties who had advocated zero COVID, that the vaccine has taken over and they're maybe not as pushed on the issue as they were before, even if they say it every now and again?
Yeah, I think that's a widespread enough view. I suppose from the government's point of view, they can say that it is there, and if they need to extend the number of countries, or if there is ever, and you always sense this was somewhere in the thinking, some EU-wide move where mandatory hotel quarantine becomes a necessity, that they can move on it very quickly. Hmm. But it definitely did seem to be, in the end, despite that initial period after Christmas where everyone was talking about zero COVID or aggression, a suppression strategy, in the end it became more politically expedient than anything else.
Yeah. Last week we were talking about the question of words which we disliked, and you brought up narrative today. I was wondering about optics.
Optics, yeah.
Can you use the word optics?
Mm-hmm. Not great, is it? Apart from opticians, really.
That's yeah.
Not great. Another one, and Gavin Jennings was pointing this out as well, is that Stephen Donnelly brought into the lexicon with no little aplomb, as is his wont this morning, was talking about step change. That could be one now that could hang around for a while.
What did you think
I did hear your one, Micheál, cognizant you were mentioning last week. I heard a minister this morning, can we name this minister, Norma Foley, let's say, using cognizant. She was cognizant of something.
Was she cognizant of the optics around a step change?
Yes. Probably that was it.
It's funny, though, just the way the words come in and then disappear. I mean, I'm on record here. Q1, Q4.
Game changer was another one.
Silver bullet.
Silver bullet, yeah. A silver bullet.
Game changer was overused. That was the problem. Yeah. How many game changers can you have that don't turn out to be game changers?
There was questions about game changer in Irish language interviews as well, wasn't there? That was or wasn't used.
Yeah. Just because we are having to live in this strange COVID world where we all are sort of like insulated against everyone else, I decided to dip back into the archive and pay a couple of clips where there was loads of crowds, where there was loads of people giving out. And so I'm going to play this first clip and we'll just hear it, and then Micheál Lehan can actually, even though he doesn't know what the clip is, can tell us what was happening at that particular time and paint a lovely picture.
Some of you do any hunting or not, but some of these commentators and critics are now like mongrel foxes, they're gone to ground. And I'll dig them out and the pack will chop them when they get them.
There you go. That's our Ardéisina when they mend something.
Liam Cosgrave and Call for Unity at a Fine Gael Ardéis.
And there was a man with a big smile and a cigarette in his gob as the Taoiseach was beaten the tub. It was fantastic stuff.
Yeah. Are you going to give us the Fianna Fáil equivalent now? No?
Yeah. Sorry, you can have, it was that predictable.
You can have.
If you want Poland, and if you want what you're doing this morning, you can't have Fianna Fáil.
Who was that?
Paddy Hillary.
And why was it extraordinary to hear Paddy Hillary bellowing?
A diplomat, of course, goes on to become European Commissioner and ultimately President, but taking the strong man behind it all, wasn't that the great view after he passed away, that he was much stronger and he's taking on Kevin Boland there, and it's in the aftermath of the arms trial, isn't it?
It is, and what was extraordinary once again was you just had that sense. It was like the equivalent of the British Labour Party, mm-hmm. which decided to have its rows and have blood on the walls with the cameras there.
Yeah, so it's great viewing when you watch the entire thing. It's captivating, like for a good 20 minutes or more.
Yeah. What do you make of it all, Sandra? Those days where you were able to go to an Ardéis and there were 500, 600 people there, all milled in and trying to back the leader.
The Greens could do it yet. The Greens may do it yet.
I know, it makes me nostalgic for going to the City West Hotel around 10 years ago to various Ardéises. And, you know, City West Hotel, never a great destination, but back when people could gather and people were drinking freely and talking freely to you as a journalist. And now
drinking
that currency
from midday
that we have,
on arrival, drinking from midday on arrival.
Well, yeah,
in
we won't say what party that was, but, you know, that thing where you just sidle up to people casually and get lots of information, good exchange. That's just not happening at the moment. So, I look back fondly at those days now.
I really do think that Nessa Harrigan coined a good phrase when she talked about the COVID TDs, where their only experience is this past year, mm-hmm. and they don't have any of that.
No, but again, the Greens are proving they have lots of other attributes of a traditional political warfare.
Okay. Just one sad note we wanted to wrap up our podcast today was a colleague of ours, Linda Sherlock, passed away. And Linda had been sort of one of the people who devised RTÉ's Week in Politics programme. She had been a sort of a stalwart when it came to RTÉ's political coverage. She covered many, many general elections. And unfortunately, she has died, and she's someone who would really be missed. Micheál, you would have worked very closely with her over many years.
Yeah, and then Linda was here the 1980s and would have worked and walked in these corridors in Leinster House. and someone who knew the intricacies of this political world very well, and someone who also knew how politics was perceived far away from here in the constituencies, and always placed an emphasis on that, and knew the importance of both, and also knew the importance of absolute decency and honesty in her journalism and how she approached people. And in the political world, that does and can be challenging at certain times, but she had integrity and decency about everything that she did. She was always a quiet person, a person who was decent, but she had too a healthy irreverence for bullies, bores, or any class of pretentiousness, while also always retaining that sense of diplomacy and keeping the language appropriate and only using words that were necessary.
Yeah, and I think that would have been recognised by all parties. There was steel to her, but there was a decorum. I certainly learned an awful lot from her. Linda Sherlock, our dear colleague who has died, we will miss her. That's all we have for your politics podcast on RTE News. I'd like to thank my guests again today. It was RTE's political correspondent, Micheál Lehane. We also had Tommy Mescal of our political division, and also Sandra Hurley, who is joining us once again for the podcast. Thanks very much for listening. Please do subscribe. Please do leave comments. We love to hear from you. But until next time, take care.